Hello and welcome back to the Chris Yeh podcast. I am, as always, Chris Yeh, and I am once again joined by my partner in television crime, Dr. Ken Franklin. We are here to recap season 2, episode 8 of Mental Samurai. I could not ask for a better broadcasting partner. How are you doing, Dr. Ken?
I'm doing fine. And those charges were dropped. Why do you keep talking crime? This is my friend Al Mansky would say is a legitimate business we are talking about here.
Yes, a very legitimate business. Perhaps That's we should right. do the rest of the broadcast talking like this.
No, let's not do that.
So this was, I thought, a pretty exciting episode. And I got to tell you, we saw some questions that I thought were some of the hardest that we've seen this year.
And I think if you'll point, you remember last week on our last podcast, I was remarking about how many fewer questions were answered correctly over the course of the episode. This one had even fewer.
Oh, yes.
It was pretty tough. And you could tell that, again, if our loyal listeners were watching for the cues that they needed to pad some time, they were there aplenty.
I was like, these are some long interviews. There are some short runs coming up.
Exactly right. So, and let's talk about our triple valedictorian first.
Yes. First up is Christina Ahlers or Ahlers. Christina spelled unusually KrystyNa. And she was a triple valedictorian. I don't know what that means, Ken. I was trying to figure that. Is that high school, college, graduate school?
High school, college, and graduate school.
Well, that is pretty impressive.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, and she managed to be an author and has a very intelligent infant, according to her, talking and starting to walk at 7 months. So expectations set pretty high with that crowd.
Now, with Christina, at first, when she came out of the gate, she seemed to me like she was pretty steady and decisive. So I had some pretty high hopes. But she went out relatively early on a question that had an unusual feature to it.
Well, this was getting back to the how many pairs question, which we've seen occasionally on the puzzle tower. And it is a puzzle, but I think she was overly careful about time. Now, this was the first pairs puzzle that had actual human faces in it, which made it significantly more difficult. The good thing is that each of the people at least had a different facial expression, which gave some more cues, but she just plain rushed it and didn't see the fourth pair.
And that is the thing. You really got to make sure that first and foremost, it's get the questions right. And then speed. Of course, speed is important, but not at the point of, especially when you're the first person leading off, at the point of getting it wrong, because each question means money.
That's right. And not only money, but again, if you can have a first decent run, that puts additional stress on the people following you, which increases the chances that they're going to boot a question. So
exactly.
You don't want to start out with, you know, she had three questions in far less than a minute, but three is not hard to beat.
Exactly. So she had good speed, but, you know, just rushed it a little bit. Now, the interesting thing about Christina is she has one of the longest IMDb entries of a contestant we've seen so far. She has 30 different IMDb acting credits. So she's a reflection of this phenomenon that we discussed a couple weeks earlier, where because all of Hollywood was shut down, people who would normally be doing acting jobs were like, hey, I got a chance to go on Mental Samurai. I got to seize that.
Yep, absolutely. And, you know, she got a little bit of money out of it and a free trip to Portugal, but I'm sure she was disappointed.
Absolutely. But still, network airtime, you know, that doesn't grow on trees. That's pretty helpful.
That's true.
For those of you who are interested in Christina's work, I think that her most prominent role is she appears, and again, this is not a show I've seen a lot, but she appears to have been a series regular on Millionaire Matchmaker, playing herself, presumably as one of the assistants or people working with the matchmaker. But she appeared on something like a dozen different episodes of this television show.
Well, maybe she can be an expert in getting us on TV, on game shows. We could work on that. Give her a call. What do you think?
I'll reach out to her. Absolutely. Now, next up came a very interesting contestant, Laith Walschlager. And Laith is, again, I've never heard this combination of things before. An NFL player, a math tutor, and a voice actor.
And a coach, and a little league coach.
Yes.
Yes. And I'm wearing my Hawaiian shirt right now. You can't see me, listeners, but I'm wearing my Hawaiian shirt in honor of Laith, because I really wanted to wear Hawaiian shirts when I got on Mental Seminary, but they said, no, solid color shirts. But he rocked it looking good. And I will also back up just a little bit. I'm certain that this was the longest time that Rob talked between contestants before he introduced Laith.
Which was an early indication, short runs ahead, but it's hard to know. You don't know if there's short runs ahead, if that's for the next contestant coming up or not. And with Laith, you know, he was just a dazzler in the interview chair. He was doing voice impressions. I don't know if you've done this, but if you go on YouTube, on his YouTube channel, he actually has a series of all his various voice impressions, the De Niro impression, the Liam Neeson impression, the epic trailer guy voice. He's done all these things. And he is also, as he pointed out, a professional voice actor and voiceover guy.
So once again, person with a lot of acting experience and not a stranger in front of the camera or the microphone. And it showed in his calmness and his poise when he was on his run, which I think he did very well at.
I found myself rooting heavily for him as his run was going on, because he was playing the game the way it should be played. Mm-hmm. He was answering questions without repeating the answers. He wasn't waiting for the read to complete before he went. He went systematically through gridlock. This was something where I'm like, this guy is playing the game the right way, and I'm so excited. And he was blazing through the trail and really getting a great time.
Yeah, and again, a lot of stuff we've already talked about. You know, the knowledge board rebus of Tiger Woods. He didn't waste any time at all on that. He had a tough puzzle, the jigsaw puzzle, because on all three of the choices, the prominent feature, the giraffe, was in exactly the same place on all three. It was identifying the background foliage for which one fit, which I thought was pretty sneaky, but it didn't trip him up one bit.
Now, of course, we were expecting, hey, Laith's going to go all the way, but he wasn't able to get the last question.
And it was, I forgot to write it down because I was just so shocked that he did. What was his 10th question there, Chris?
So I believe, and again, I forgot to write it down as well, but I believe it was a sequence question where he was rushing it. Do you remember this? Like it was the states,
yes,
and the abbreviations?
Oh, that's right. It was the abbreviations of the state, and he had to rank the full names of the states in alphabetical order, and he only had 30 seconds, and that's just not enough time. So I think he had gotten a little complacent on 7, 8, 9, and he got himself in time pressure.
But still, he was at 3 minutes and 21 seconds for 9 questions. So that gave him a full minute and 40 seconds. He still had plenty of time left when he began to panic, but it's got time pressure. And what happened was he kind of knew the answer, although he said he would have gotten it wrong, but he didn't do the thing that you always have to do on sequence, which is to read the question back and say, what is it they're asking for? Is it earliest to latest? Is it first to last? What have you? And in this case, it was in the alphabetical order by the state and name the states.
Right. And you know, this is one of the things that would make me imagine that I would take one of those write on wipe off boards and tape it to my right thigh when I was on the run, because taking notes would have been a huge advantage in doing a question like that.
Absolutely. Now, a few other things about Laith. Again, incredible run. And it was one of those ones where it's like, oh, is it going to hold up? Because again, we know lurking at the end of the night is Nick Santo, who has been phenomenal to date. And so it was like 9 might or might not hold up. Mm-hmm. So in terms of Laith, Laith is another one back to back with Christina with a ton of IMDb credits. He has 33 IMDb credits. And the most prominent of which is he was one of the contestants on The Worst Cooks in America in 2019.
Well, I'm sure he was entertaining television in that series. I didn't see it, but he clearly enjoys entertaining, and that's okay.
Absolutely. Hey, that's a great thing. And I think my wife and daughter usually watch Worst Cooks in America, and I usually pop in and see a bit of it here and there. I'm sure I must have seen him on Worst Cooks because I can vaguely remember there being a big football player guy, but I don't remember too much about it. But he, I think, made it through 5 episodes before being eliminated from Worst Cooks in America.
You know what? I'm just reading down the rest of my notes. We are both in error. The sequence question about states was on the Circle of Samurai run.
Oh, darn it.
It was the 9th question on the Circle of Samurai, which we'll get to after we talk about the other ones. So I completely blanked on what his last question was.
Well, whatever it was, I do have as a note, he should have taken more time. That's a question that's worth $5,500. He had plenty of time left. He guessed early, or he rushed it. There was no reason to rush. Take as much time. And believe me, I know about taking as much time as you can.
Yes. And you showed that to great when you answered your last $25,000 question on your initial run.
Now let's talk about Lathe as well. A little bit more background on Lathe. You heard that he's a football player. Lathe was a defensive end for the Delaware football team. Do you know the mascot of the University of Delaware?
Well, Delaware is the first state. I would maybe has something to do with drugs because DuPont got started there. So no, I do not know. Please enlighten me.
I did not know this either, per se. I may have heard it at some point in time. They are the Delaware Blue Hens. Probably their most famous football alum is the quarterback Joe Flacco, who won a Super Bowl with the Baltimore Ravens.
Okay.
Lathe played defensive end. His playing weight was 280 pounds. So that's why he was saying, obviously he's trimmed down since then. Most football players lose weight after they retire from football because it's better for their health. But he was saying, oh, I don't know if he was going to fit in. You may remember from season 1, Nathan Gonzalez was the biggest competitor. Nathan clocked in at something like close to 300 pounds, and he had trouble fitting in. They told him, don't eat before going in. And when they were putting him into the chair, a bunch of the audience members were like, he's not going to fit. He's too big. But they did manage to squeeze him in.
As I recall, the stage manager reassured him and says, we'll find a way to make it work.
and then Lathe was also a finance major and theater minor at the University of Delaware. And because he was a football player and he might have redshirted, he got to pay a little extra. And so he also picked up his MBA as well. So he was an academic star, made the dean's list multiple times. So just an all-around incredibly talented guy.
Absolutely. And, you know, no matter what happens on Mental Samurai, he's going to continue to be successful at whatever he puts himself to.
Absolutely. Now, next up, we had our third contestant, David Rendon. David Rendon was an Army veteran and just an inspiring guy. We didn't even get the full story, but, you know, as you may have heard, he was an amputee. He lost part of his foot. But he's doing this mountain climbing, you know, dreaming of climbing Everest. He's done a bunch of other mountain climbs. And when he was in the Army, in addition to the other things he did, he was an honor guard leader, which means that he was accompanying the bodies of those who were killed in action back to their families. Exactly. Which is such an important, important duty.
And also, in addition to his selfless service for the military, he was also really clearly focused on service to others because he's been involved in multiple philanthropic projects since leaving the Army. So a great man, a great heart. And yeah, again, you want to root for somebody like that.
And he was just super enthusiastic. His trademark phrase, let's do this, baby. Come on, baby. And
it was so full of energy. He was trash talking Ava all the way through the course. That was something I would looking forward to and going with Ava is being able to cuss her out in between questions. And he went to that all the way.
Also off to a good start. You know, she had this sequence of magicians. He made sure, is it earliest to latest to earliest? He was doing pretty well, but then locking it in, he was very decisive on locking it in, but then matching pairs.
Yeah, exactly. And but before the matching pairs, he had the four items on memory that were in a square. And as we've noted, all through the season, Ava would read five things to note. But in this case, with four different arrows, the question was only four things to remember, which surprised me. And he had no trouble with it, but then he got over to matching pairs. And yeah, matching pairs, you're going to have to burn up some clock to be very careful on that.
The thing is, it's not necessarily hard to find matching pairs, but making sure you found all of them is the tricky part.
And I've been imagining about trying to count the unique ones might be a better approach, because then you take the number of unique ones and subtract, divide that by two, and you got an answer. That I don't know if that would work because I'm not in the chair, but it might be a strategy that would pay off on that type of question.
Well, let's try that in future episodes, right? Basically, mm-hmm. you're counting off the unique ones, and then you count off the ones that look like repeats on the other hand. You could do a two-hander.
Right, exactly.
I like that idea. I think we're going to have to try that out. See, what we're doing here is, thanks to your game designer's brain, we're figuring out on-the-fly strategies that people should be listening to and taking notes for season three.
Yes, well, that's right. Expect it if the producers listen to what we're saying, then we're going to come up against questions in Sanskrit and we're going to be doomed. yeah, we'll see.
All right, so David had three questions, 1,500. So that's a total of 15 questions correct so far through three competitors. Next up was Charity Clark. She was 23, a very enthusiastic online business coach.
Right.
And, you know, I noted down, I was really loved the fact that she went through gridlock, did gridlock correctly.
Yes.
This is a day when people seemed to get gridlock correct.
They seemed to learn. And that was the first gridlock with 3 6-letter answers.
She seemed like she was a little slow. I was concerned mm-hmm. about the pace, but you know what? She ran into the memory tower and just was not prepared at all.
Exactly. And she didn't really spend a lot of time looking at it, which is lethal. You have to be paying attention for every second. Suck in the information for the first 5 seconds and then answer.
Now, I have always maintained that the memory tower is the hardest of the towers. Do you agree with that?
For me, I don't think so. I think really? The sequence is slightly harder, but you have to have strategy and self-confidence when you're dealing with memory. You have to know that when you face that yellow tower, you have to clear your mind and suck in everything you have, and then you go for it. Because you're not sure what the question's going to be.
Yes.
And so you have to absorb everything and that moment of preparation before the question is started, I think, is what makes the difference between whether you beat that tower or not.
And again, with memory, it varies greatly, right? There are, let's think through the different memory editions. The ones that we're really concerned about are the ones where you have basically like the minefield, where you have a bunch of things right. that you have to remember.
I think the minefield is tough, yes.
The recording usually is not a problem, right?
Right.
The audio, the only problem with the audio is that it takes a bunch of time, which could be
right.
deadly if you've run out of time. But otherwise, most people get that. The text messages are usually pretty good. They're sometimes
right.
a little tricky, like number of exclamation marks, but typically they haven't been. So I think it's basically the mind feed. And then, of course, there's the repeating the sequence of noises or what have you. I think it's really like the mind field, and then occasionally they have the memory where you look at the picture and you have to remember an element of the picture. Those two are the hard ones because you just don't have a lot of time.
That's correct. And you don't know what element she's going to ask the question about. There were several in season one where there were three or four people with name tags, and then you had to match the name with the face.
Oh, that was
brutal. But there was so much other information, you're not sure that they're going to ask for a name or a face. They've had one or two where there was a movie and you had to pick out something in life. But the minefield is one that they are relying on quite a bit, as well as the remember the sequence ones.
Yep.
And again, she just wasn't ready for it. And so she didn't use those 5 seconds to memorize some. And that's what killed her.
It absolutely did. And unfortunately, it meant she went out after only two questions, only $1,000. Again, $1,000 is not nothing, but it's pretty low.
It's it was obviously going out early in the first half would be incredibly painful because the first core questions are usually relatively easy, at least compared to the last two or three. But still, like I said, 500 a question is still something you can at least take home.
Yep. Next up was Shadi Arifage. Is that how you pronounce it? I didn't quite catch it.
I yeah, Shadi Irifage, yes.
Shadi Arifage, a veterinarian. For
Right.
those of you who did, I've looked him up. So he's a graduate of the Cornell School of Veterinary Medicine. He makes his home in Las Vegas, where he runs his own veterinary telemedicine outfit. So very entrepreneurial, very successful guy, considered a huge influencer in the field of veterinarians.
That's great. And again, another chance to talk about things in between because up until this point, we'd only seen 17 questions answered in the first half of the show.
That's
And
usually two good runs.
so we got to talk about how people would bring in their $1 goldfish to get surgery. And sure, I'll take your money. I'll make it work.
Hey, listen, if you love is love is love, although I must admit, I've never had that kind of love for a goldfish.
No. This is the third contestant this season who stayed away from the bars on the cage.
I thought of you when I was watching. I'm like, he's a hand clasper.
Yep. And I don't know why, but that's just where he was comfortable.
Now, I've noted we haven't had a hand clasper that had a really successful run. It doesn't seem like hand clasping is a good tactic.
Well, I think hand clasping or putting your hands in there distracts you. I think you're spending mental energy on where your hands are. There is a default place to put your hands where you can let your cerebellum take care of what your hands are supposed to do, so you can free up your cerebrum to answering the questions.
See, here we go with the medical knowledge. I love that. Again, just to make sure the folks at home are following along, don't forget the cerebellum, which is generally responsible for motor control and things like that. That's why grasping the handles helps engage the cerebellum and keep your cerebrum, which is what does the thinking, focused on what you're doing.
Right, your cerebellum is your greatest hits gland. When you learn to walk, you're doing it with all of your brain. But once you get good at it, you take that subroutine of taking a step, and your brain stores it in the cerebellum. And so when your body says walk, cerebellum says, "Oh yeah, I got this," and you don't even think about it. That's why you can end up a half a block away from where you're supposed to because your mind is somewhere else. Hands on handlebars is something we all learn when we learned how to ride a bike. So if you put hands on handlebars, that's out of your mind and you can focus on what's in front of you.
Now, with Shadi's run, I have to say that when he was going through, I wasn't necessarily with a lot of high hopes. I thought it was excessive in terms of talking it out. I think that when he went to gridlock, he got the words out of the quote unquote correct order. So I was a little concerned. But what ultimately did him in was one of these classic lack of knowledge things. Where, as we described it, the mature contestants don't necessarily know the most modern things going on. And he had a rebus that was
Yes,
a video game. It was just, they said video game.
yes,
Go ahead.
a video game. And to be fair, the first of the two was not obvious. A lot of these, like a tiger, you're not going to say tabby or striped cat. It's a tiger. Well, that fort could have also been a castle. Could have been, several things. And so if you didn't make that initial leap to fort, which I didn't, then you're going to spend some time trying to figure out what else it is.
No, that's true. And I didn't make that leap either. I was like Castle Knight. I don't remember any game called Castle Knight. And I was thinking, so Knight, Knight, Knight. And then it hit me. Oh, Fortnite. Oh my God, of course.
Yes.
But that's because I'm aware of Fortnite. I have never played the game, but I know it's an absolutely huge, huge, huge mega hit. And it's what
Absolutely.
caused that silly flossing dance you see that kids do sometimes. And I don't think he had ever actually even seen it or heard of it.
I'm sure he hadn't. And I empathize with him. I'll introduce him to the greatest hits of the Chainsmokers someday.
But I did think, I mean, it's like you know, I again, just this is a minor thing, but why bother guessing something that's obviously wrong? Why not run the clock all the way down, hoping against hope that something triggers in your mind?
Well, I can tell you in my particular case, I locked in a wrong answer with 2 minutes to go because I was conscious of what the quality of the television was. You know, I really didn't want my legacy on that show to be 3 minutes going, once I ran out of things to say, let somebody else play.
You know, I never thought of it that way. This is why it's great that we're getting this insight from people who actually played the game. I never would have thought of it that way, but you're right. That is definitely a way to sort of go out with dignity. And, you know, maybe that's what Shoddy had in mind.
Yeah, I think so. And at least, you know, he acknowledged that he had been defeated. And again, as a veterinary surgeon with innovations, he's not going to go bankrupt anytime soon. So.
But of course, the irony is, despite the fact that we think of him as going out relatively early, he did the second best of the competitors outside of Lath.
Correct. He had four correct for $2,000, which other than Lath was a pretty good run.
Now that brought us to the reigning samurai, Nick Santo, a guy who had just been incredible, had already set a couple of record-breaking runs. And it really seemed like Nick was really focused and locked in. By the way, when he stepped into the play, I was watching it on television, quote unquote, live, and I noted it's 9:44 as he stepped in. So I'm like, okay, he cannot have like gone out on some sort of first question or second question. There's no flame right out here because it's too early in the night. There has to be a good run coming up.
Yeah, that's right. And again, on the one hand, you know, he wants to do well. Yeah. He's come very close three times. But I think you still are going to be a little gun shy after you've had the case of the yips that he had on the Circle of Samurai, which was to us watching a week ago. But for him, it was somewhere between an hour and 12 hours before.
And again, he's done it twice now. So that was definitely weighing on him. You could see he was like very frustrated by this, trying to figure out what to do. And he just said, I'm just going to lock it. I'm just going to be really focused. And I think he was. He was answering before the reads were being finished. He was playing the game the right way. He actually guessed on a 50-50 shot, what's the name of the wizard who chases the Smurfs. Is it Galadriel or Gargamel? Which indicates he's neither a Smurfs fan or a Lord of the Rings fan.
but he got it right. And here's the thing I noticed at this point. His first question was in the puzzle tower. Mm-hmm. And there were 3 8-legged octopuses and 1 7-legged. And he frustrated himself. He wanted to be sure, but he acknowledged to himself that he took 15 or 20 seconds that he didn't want. And he mentioned that as he was going around. But the other thing is, as he's going through these first 7 questions, is you're hearing all of this chatter from Lath, which is we've never seen on another competitor. You know, they've been respectful in allowing this person to go. Lath is trash talking all the time, which would really annoy me if I was in the chair. It's my turn. Hush. Makes me wonder if Nick could hear Lath, if Lath's mic was only private for recording, and whether it was loud enough for Nick to be able to see him in the chair, hear him in the chair.
Well, I think it's loud enough because we see some, at least as I recall, some back and forth, right? It's not just purely quips in the isolation in the night. Right. It felt like there was back and forth, and that meant that it was something that Nick was hearing, which is interesting because Mental Samurai, typically there's no way, especially in season one, for a competitor to affect another competitor. In this case, you're saying, hey, maybe Lath's trash talk actually affected Nick.
He's an NFL veteran. On the offensive, defensive line, that trash talk is happening constantly. And I think Lath was very comfortable with it, especially as big an extrovert as he is. So
absolutely.
I thought that was a very significant effort in the stresses that Nick was undergoing.
And so Nick is going through, but also Nick knows he does not necessarily need to be fast.
Right.
He just needs to get 10 questions correct.
That's correct.
And so then, he's going through.
And then he hit the minefield.
This was a tough one. This was one of the harder minefields we've seen.
Well, it's right up there with the one in his Circle of Samurai when he was up against the six voodoo masks.
Yeah.
And here were six robots that you could not assign names to.
Did you have any idea what to do? I had no clue. I was like, well, oh my God.
Not when it showed up, but the fact that they've had two of these incredibly hard minefields got me thinking about how I would approach it. Mm. And I think what I would say is, as soon as you have something like that, pick one color and memorize the shape of that one color in each six. So in the first three, it's vertical line, circle, slanted line, and just ignore the rest of the picture. Just pick out one feature and see if, and you can use that, because then you can identify that feature in the one you're asked to locate, and you can pick it out that way. That's what I intend to try on episodes 9 and 10.
I think, as always, I'll defer to you and I'll try to follow your technique. It's a hard one because you don't know in advance whether the feature you picked is actually unique between the items. But what you can do, I guess, is you can at least get the order. You can load the order 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. And then even if you've at least been able to narrow it down to two of them, you might have enough of a gestalt to guess which one it is.
Right. And again, it's a matter of having your mind empty so that you can see something to focus in on and not get overwhelmed by the fact that these are six essentially identical things.
Right. No, the thought in my mind is crap, 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 crap.
Yeah. Well, unfortunately, 2 seconds of crap, crap, crap means you're not going to remember two of the six items.
Exactly. And Nick had no idea. And so he was stopped after 8 questions. If he had gotten that question, I don't know whether he's on pace to beat out Laith or not,
but
certainly he had plenty of time to get all 10 if he could have gotten that question right. So, you know, Nick went out after 8 questions, $4,000, bringing his 3-day total to $44,000, which is a good, respectable amount. It's not quite as much as our friend the Catman before, but, you know, $44,000 in 3 days is a good run.
Yes. And again, Laith earned his chance at the Circle of Samurai. He used his own strategy that we hadn't seen with anybody. So, and again, I think you and I were both hoping that he did well.
Absolutely. I was rooting hard for him. And, you know, he was chatting with Rob. Rob was saying, hey, what are you going to use the money for? He's like, hey, I just wrecked my car. I'd like to get a new one that actually functions.
Yes. And yeah. Well, again, you don't know how much money he's making outside of the NFL. I don't know how much money he saved when he was in the NFL, but...
Well, this is an important point. So, yeah. Laith was an NFL player, but he never had an NFL contract. So, what this means is, you know, he was, again, a great player for the Delaware Blue Hens, but the Delaware Blue Hens are not necessarily a huge football powerhouse.
Right.
And so, Laith, in the NFL... was a part of the training camp for the Arizona Cardinals. So that meant that he was an NFL player. He actually was there, but he never got into an NFL game, which may mean that he never got a contract other than a training camp contract, which is not going to pay you a huge amount of money. So he is, like the rest of us, a working stiff trying to make his way in the world.
Right. And again, I wish him well. We'll see if he makes more money next week. But again, a very interesting run. Again, a long chat with Rob before it got started, and they traded impressions back and forth. Once again,
he was much better than Rob.
Yeah, obviously. Yeah, but Rob is better at other things. So
absolutely, like being one of the handsomest men in the world.
Well, and I will never forget his portrayal of Nick Adenros in the first miniseries of The Stand. He did a marvelous job in that.
I'm a very talented guy.
Yes.
So with the run, so Laith goes out there and he came out focused again. This is a competitor, knows how to play the game the right way.
First 4 questions were all easy. He expected them to be easy. He responded to them easy, and that gave him time to approach the second 6.
Yes. Now, the first question where he encountered some problems, and let's discuss how you deal with a question like this. We'd never seen this kind of question before, I think, which is, what is larger, what is more, 6 quarters or 28 nickels? I don't think we've seen a question like that before.
No, but it's a perfect mental samurai question.
Absolutely.
It is a knowledge thing. It's a math thing, okay, for a math tutor, but admittedly, a math tutor who doesn't like math. And that caused him to stutter a little bit, but he got it right.
But he took the wrong approach. So I think the right approach with this one is actually to basically go backwards. So the thing is, what everyone seemed to do when they got to this, and what Lathe did, was he said, well, how much is 6 quarters and how much is 28 nickels? Mm-hmm. And again, you can get there pretty quickly. But the faster thing to say is 6 quarters is the equivalent of 30 nickels. I don't need the exact amount. I know that's more.
I had not thought of that. That was a brilliant approach, Chris.
Oh, thank you.
Nice shortcut.
It is, you know, basically, I have the public school system to thank for my grasp of mathematics.
Right.
Because of this, because of the public school system, I was forced to go through physical education. Mm-hmm. Physical education, I wouldn't mind, except that it seemed to me that 60% of physical education was sitting in a line on the ground while roll was being called. Like the most worthless thing imaginable. So, and especially because if you have a last name like mine, yay, you don't get called to the end anyways.
Every
PE class, I'm like, okay, I'm going to sit here on the ground for 25 minutes now before I have to say my name. And then we'll play for like 15 minutes before they send us back in. Well, so I hated it.
I did not have that same experience in the public school system in physical education. But I did most of my physical education in military base schools, which were generally a higher quality, and our coach just basically counted our heads, and if that number was there, then he moved on, and then
that's a good heuristic.
Yeah, tried to figure out who was missing while we were playing, so he got us going. He was also the football coach and a great guy.
That's a much better approach. Now, I'm interested in what you just said. We're going to take a minor discursion here. So you said you were going to military-based schools growing up. Are you a part of a military family? Was your father military? Tell me more about this.
Yes, my father was a career Army. He was an engineer and an aviator before the Aviation Corps existed. Mm-hmm. So he had several jobs as an aviator and a pilot, and then several jobs as an engineer. I had an uncle who was in the Air Force. My brother was an Air Force Academy graduate and flew many, many different aircraft. But when I was a junior in high school, as I said before, my dad said, well, you clearly want to go to college. How are you going to pay for it? He wasn't even going to fill out a FAFSA form. So my choices were my choices were ROTC or a military academy. I wasn't physically fit enough to go to West Point. So I got an Army ROTC scholarship, which is why I got it considered Stanford in addition to Michigan State. Had a great time at Michigan State.
Now, the Franklin family, obviously, we got a strong Army thread there. I also heard there's Air Force yep. Academy. Mm-hmm. Do you guys draw the line at Navy, no Navy or Marines?
No, it's just that none of us were interested in the Marines. Now, one of my sons, John, is a retired Marine. I'm very proud of him. As a matter of fact, we were talking today about his time in the Crucible during his basic training. I have complete respect for his ability to wear that uniform.
Well, as you know, while there is a lot of rivalry between the different branches of the U.S. military, there is fundamental respect as well. So that's always good
to
see.
Well, the Army-Navy game, the Army-Air Force game, and the Air Force-Navy game are three games where you fight like heck against each other, and then you turn around and say, we're going to work together to protect this country. I worked at West Point as the chief of staff of the hospital at West Point for 3 years late in my career. And that's a very noble institution that I really enjoyed serving at.
Fantastic. Well, that I think was a very worthy discursion. I loved finding out more about you. I mean, even after all this time, Dr. Ken, I'm still learning new things.
Well, yeah, but we're not going to talk about, the colors in my underwear collection. You can just take that off the list now. All right.
It's all purple, every single bit of it.
Did Debbie talk to you before the show?
Yeah, she did. We had a quick conversation. So So we have Laith. He's going through. I thought that, you know, again, the quarters threw him off his game. He wasn't necessarily expecting it. He took longer than he expected. He seemed a little more nervous when he went through gridlock. Got it, obviously. But, you know, it felt like he'd been thrown off. And then when he got to the names of the states, just could not make it happen.
But I will comment also, he had a unique approach to the repeated sounds. You know, had the wind and hail and thunder and lightning. He had the list and he had to repeat it. And so he said the whole sequence after each one. Wind, wind, hail, wind, hail, wind, hail, thunder, wind, hail, thunder. You know, Ava would say one and he would say the whole sequence. So he was absolutely certain when the sequence was complete that no matter what the question was, he was going to know the answer. And I respected that. That was a perfect strategy for that kind of question.
I agree. I think that's absolutely right. And that also meant that he could rattle it off. It was already loaded. He didn't have to think about it.
Exactly. But then but as you said, he had been rattled a couple times, rattled by the math question and a couple other ones. He was also a little nervous about who had written how many books. And so he knew he was under time pressure. And again, I'm pretty certain he had only about 40 seconds for the 10th question.
I think that's right. I think that he was rushing. And again, it was definitely the time pressure was weighing on him. And I think it was Alaska, Alabama, Arkansas, and there's one more. Arizona.
Arizona, exactly.
All those states. And it's one of those ones where you just have to, it felt like, you know, for me, what I was doing is like, it was the classic thing, read through the question first and then try to ignore what Ava's saying.
Yes.
Because this one's going to take time.
Right. Because
you're like A-R-I, A-R-K, A-L-A, A-L-A, oh crap, A-L-A-B, A-L-A-S. Okay, got it. Right. That was sort of the sequence that was going through my mind.
And you had to focus, you had to get everything out of the way and put two in place, then put the third one in place, and then put the fourth one in place, and then say it.
Exactly. And so he didn't quite get it. Again, great run. I was rooting for him to get it right. This is a guy, I loved him as a competitor. I thought that, you know, he was, you know, you have a game designer's mind. It seemed like he came in with an athlete who's really read the playbook, right? He knows the playbook. He's reading the defense. He reads the coverage. And he was like, okay, deploy tactic number three.
Well, and he also has supreme self-confidence. I mean, he exudes it. And that's, I think that's why he was confident and kind of nudging Nick as he came by. So
absolutely. So what that meant is that he was able to get 8 questions right. That's $20,000. Add that to the $4,500 he got for his first run. And that is a one-day total of $24,500 that he'll take into Episode 9 as the reigning samurai.
I'm very interested to see, you know, I've seen a lot of game shows in my 65 years. And when there's a show with a champion that comes back, it's awkward when you have the last show of the season.
Well, does that mean if he wins on the last show of the season, does the person who wins the last show of the season get to come back the next season? Like in Jeopardy, if you're the season finale, you come back at the beginning of the next season, right?
We don't know. That's the big unanswered question that I'm going to be watching for when we watch episode 10.
Well, I am looking forward to that as well. Well, this is pretty exciting. I mean, we've had a number of very accomplished champions. I think this is the first, however, that we had somebody make it through to the Circle of Samurai without having a 10 out of 10 run first.
That's right. You're correct. And again, it just goes to show that as the season has worn on, I suspect the fatigue in the contestants has worn on. And we've seen a poorer and poorer average performance. I hope that gets reversed in the episode 9. I'd like to see some good long runs because those are just more fun to watch.
Absolutely. Well, you and I will be tuning in next Tuesday night to watch this episode. We should be able to record a recap and analysis the next day, Wednesday the 14th. That night, I will be taking a red eye to Florida to take my family to Disney World, among other things. So the finale, the season finale, it may take a few extra days for us to do the recording. But rest assured, we will get to it. We will complete this entire season and have 10 different recap episodes to share with the rest of the world. Although, Dr. Ken, you'll note I had a special guest, Becky Eldridge, for one of them because you were unable to make it.
Yes, well, I apologize for that, but, you know, I'm not a machine. I'm just a human being.
Hard to tell sometimes, Dr. Ken. Your performance is so remarkable.
Well, thank you. And you as well. And again, I'm looking forward to meeting with you next week, and we'll see how things go.
Awesome. Well, on behalf of the great Dr. Ken Franklin, and don't forget, you can find Dr. Ken's game, Back to the Future, Dice Through Time, in stores everywhere, and you can look him up on Board Game Geek and see all the things he's coming out. Dr. Ken, again, can be found online on social media as Ken Plays 2Grin, 2, the number 2, everywhere you go. And Dr. Ken, any final words?
I would suggest you stay out of the heat. I think 2021 is the year we have proven that global warming is real.
Yes.
When you're seeing wildfires all the way across northern Canada, that's a sign.
When you're seeing temperatures in the Arctic of over 100 degrees Fahrenheit, that is a sign.
Exactly right.
Well, let us hope that we can put our brains to work and help some other people maybe reverse this course. I don't know. We're going to have to talk about this. Is it geoengineering? Are we going to look into some of these more exotic solutions? We'll have to do a special episode aside from Mental Samurai to explore this issue.
Yeah, except that I have absolutely zero expertise in how to solve global warming other than I'm going to take care of the energy I expend.
Well, then we will skip over the discussion of geoengineering and the creation of plankton blooms and the like. We'll save that for another time. Dr. Ken, thank you as always for joining me. And for the rest of you who are out there listening, tune in again next week for another Mental Samurai recap.